Hello, everyone. I am Jennifer Jones with the Barbara and Richard Somme Center for Gerontological Excellence, housed in the University of Iowa's College of Nursing in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Welcome to Embracing the Journey of Aging, where we will discuss all things related to aging. The mission of the Somme Center is to promote optimal aging and to improve the quality of life for all older adults and their caregivers. Featured on our podcast, you will hear the voices of our Somme Center Director, Dr. Harley Abuck, Samantha Witrock, our Somme Center Coordinator, our Administration and Communications Coordinator, Susan Trey, and from me, Jen Jones, Program Coordinator for our Optimal Aging Initiative. We hope you enjoy our conversations with Somme Center friends, partners, donors, and other members of the Somme Center as we are all embracing the journey of aging.
Welcome to Embracing the Journey of Aging with the Somme Center. I'm Dr. Harley Abuck, and I'm your host for today's episode. Today, I will be introducing to you a community member, Kay Weiler. And Kay, I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself. I could go on and on about you being a former faculty member at the University of Iowa College of Nursing, a longtime nurse expert in gerontology, but I think a person's story is always so much more interesting coming for them. Could you tell us a little bit about where you're from and why did you go into nursing?
I was born and raised in Indiana in a small town. I think we had one stoplight. I didn't know anything other than rural Indiana. I expressed an interest in nursing, and my dad was a veteran of World War II, highly respected nurses, thought very highly of them, and also was the father of three daughters, and wanted each of us to have an education where if the need arose, we could support ourselves and a family. I was the middle child. I really loved school. I talked to my dad about it. Typical family. He made the decisions. But he said that he would pay for my college education. And I said, I can go to a community hospital. No, you need a BSN. Why this man, who was a bookkeeper for a lumber company, knew that, I don't know. But that was what he wanted. And I went to Indiana University and met my husband. I was a student nurse. He was an intern. Got married as a student nurse. And just as I followed my husband through his education was the Vietnam War. And he was given the option of going into the public health service, the National Health Service Corps. And that was an option that he took. We were the physician and nurse in a small rural community in Wisconsin. And we had cable television, which was brand new. Unfortunately, they didn't ground the connection. Lightning hit, blew up our television, burned the house. So we'd been married like 6 months, and we had nothing. The National Health Service group said, do you want to stay? Do you want to go? And he said, I think I'd like to see what other options there are. One of the options was the National Institutes of Health, which for him was just heaven. So we ended up in Gaithersburg, Maryland. I ended up working in a nursing home. I had one of the most marvelous supervisors. And she taught me so much that I just decided gerontology was what I wanted. And she was a former OR nurse. I learned more about sterile technique from her than I'd learned in school. She had such an impact on me. She cared about those residents, cared about their health care, cared about their family. And I just respected her so much. That's where gerontology and Kay Weiler met, and it was wonderful. We ended up moving as John finished his commitment, and, but that was the beginning.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story, how something that you could say was sort of serendipitous, right, that you would end up, you know, in a nursing home in Gaithersburg, Maryland, and find your life calling.
It just fit.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about where did you go then from there in terms of your own career with older adults? We're assuming that John's career was going in a parallel direction, but specifically for you, where did you go from that that original experience?
I wanted to teach, so I started looking at opportunities from Washington. I'm trying to think where we went from there. Went to Kansas City, and I wanted to teach, so I interviewed at a community hospital and was hired to teach.
I'm going to interrupt you just for a moment because the timing of this is critical. This would have been mid-70s. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, your Bachelor of Science in Nursing was so unusual that a hospital would consider a university-prepared nurse able to teach in the hospital. Today, of course, you and I both know that they would be master's prepared or a doctor of nursing practice prepared.
Right.
But you were very early in the Bachelor of Science world in nursing.
I was. And again, you know, I wish I had asked my dad why, but I never did. And that was also when the big push for getting a bachelor's as the entry-level degree. But I knew that there were a lot of nurses who were hospital-based or associate degree, and that by having a bachelor's, I was a step. I ended up teaching in rehab nursing, which wasn't exclusively gerontology, but was certainly an aspect of it. But I had a practicum that I taught with a rehab facility, and turns out that was when I got pregnant with our daughter, had our daughter, and then we moved. But really got my feet kind of wet in teaching and enjoyed it.
Really interesting. So when did you go back to graduate school?
I started at Boston College Boston University, because that was a requirement of the teaching position that I had in the hospital-based program. And then, again, my husband finished his commitment, and we moved to Iowa, and I started at the University of Iowa, I think, in 77. That was back when there were grants available. And so it was perfect timing, because the grant made it possible for me to get my training while my husband was on faculty. And I ended up being a research assistant for Kathy Schwier, who is still a dear friend. Just wonderful individual, wonderful woman. And that's when I started my master's program.
That's so interesting, Kay, because you were there, in a manner of speaking, at ground zero in the College of Nursing at the University of Iowa when it really was starting its rise as a gerontology powerhouse. And so it's so interesting to talk to people from that time, because now you can look back. So if that was the late 70s, what are we talking about, 40 years ago? Mm-hmm. And since that time, the College of Nursing has been such, you know, really world-renowned for the gerontology nursing program. And one of the things that was amazing to me, so I finished graduate school in 2008. I finished my PhD. And as I started going to national conferences, I had always been, like you, kind of a gerontology nurse at heart. I was in Florida, mainly taking care of older adults. And I heard about Iowa in Florida, just because of the impact, because it was so early and the specialization. The university I attended didn't have something like that. I had to cross the street to the School of Aging Studies to take the coursework on older adults that you could take in your own college.
And the people who, when I think of gerontology, I think of Kitty Buckwalter. She's a psych nurse, but also focuses on the elderly. And I think of Meridine Moss. And Meridine was a force to be reckoned with. What an amazing woman. Better to apologize than to ask permission. What a character, but what a force.
Yeah.
And she...
You know, and what's amazing to me with these, what I think of as our foremothers, right, in gerontological nursing, is that these were Midwestern women with just that kind of pioneer DNA in them, like yourself in Indiana, right? That when you have set yourself on a certain, you know, journey, you are going to accomplish it. And neither drought nor grasshoppers or anything else that didn't stop your forebears is not stopping you.
Stubborn is good. Stubborn frequently wins the race.
Absolutely. And I think particularly in the care of older adults, because there aren't quick fixes. There aren't sometimes easy wins. There is instead traveling with people through, you know, the later years of their life and trying to make things a little bit better.
And caring for the family.
Right.
And it's not a one-person situation. It's relationships, it's interactions, it's previous patterns of health. It's a whole conglomeration. But that's what makes it fascinating.
I know. Isn't that why you love being a nurse?
It is.
You get to ask people in sometimes very intimate things, right?
One of the most fascinating things about being a volunteer, and I'm jumping ahead, but one of the most fascinating things about being a volunteer on the clinical unit is that I can step outside that professional role. So mm-hmm. I'm not constrained, if you will, and say, you know, things that are flippant or things that are potentially embarrassing. But the goal is to get humor into the situation as a volunteer, because there's not a lot of humor on neurosurgery. But it's interesting to step outside that very real role.
Well, interestingly enough, you've jumped over from graduate school right into the neuroscience, but in maybe about a couple of sentences, tell us how you got from point A to point B, because I want to really hear about your neurosurgical personal experience before we get to your volunteering.
We were here in Iowa. I taught at Kirkwood Community College and decided that I'd reached my potential teaching, and I taught on the neurosurgical floor. Really enjoyed it, learned a lot, had an amazing staff, and then had finished up my master's program. I had to do written comps, and then I had to do a thesis. And I kept hoping they would change their minds about the thesis. So I got creative and decided I'd go to law school. I thought by the time I
finished... That's a lot of work just to try not to do a thesis.
I thought by the time I finished my law school degree, they'll have dropped this thesis thing. Wrong. They didn't. But I loved law school. I loved the different approach to thinking, the different approach to problem solving. There aren't many people who probably say they loved law school. The bar, taking the bar, was a pain in the patuska, but I really enjoyed the thought process. So I still wanted to teach at the college level. You needed a master's. Thank God for Kitty Buckwalter. I went to Kitty and said, okay, I want to do it on involuntary commitment, because I thought it was a mixture of law and nursing. So...
Well, and I'm going to interrupt you for a second, because once again, you're like a history of 20th century nursing. At the time you were doing your master's, the master's was a terminal degree in nursing.
Yes, it was.
There wasn't yet a PhD in nursing, so that's why you had to do a 5-chapter thesis. So this was a big deal.
It was not a big deal.
It was like a dissertation type project. So you were not a scaredy cat. Obviously, if you thought law school was easier than the thesis.
Just, writing for me was difficult.
Okay.
I could give a lecture. I could talk. Writing was a challenge. So putting words on paper and using a computer.
Mm-hmm.
My husband was the writer. My husband loved writing. He was prolific. But he also loved computers. So I was trying to write on this thing that didn't have Microsoft Office. It had DOS.
I remember working in DOS.
Control-Alt-Delete. Control.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. And I just struggled. And actually had our son. There's 10 years between our kids. But after law school, I was pregnant when I graduated from law school. After law school, my husband took a sabbatical in San Diego. So we packed up, we moved the family for 6 months to San Diego. And I'm arguing with this machine that I didn't have a clue how to deal with. And I'm trying to put words on paper, words on a screen that I can print out. I lost a chapter. I inadvertently deleted it. Thank God I had printed it. So I had to go back and re-input it. Long story short, I survived. Thank God for Kitty Buckwalter. And got my thesis approved. And I have to tell you, this is one of the funniest things. At that time, you had to make sure that the page number in the upper right-hand corner was the same font as the text. There was an error in the program. You couldn't do it. You could not do it. My husband rewrote the program. I was able to do it. I did my defense, and one of the things that I had to do was come up with a way to circle something. And I thought, how am I going to meet this requirement? Some of the requirements at that time were
Your margins. I remember.
Oh, it was absurd.
Absolutely.
And I was just, I mean, I was already almost in tears. I was like, I can't do one more thing. I just can't. My husband said, do you have a ruler? And I said, of course. So I got him a ruler. He took the circles in the middle of some rulers so you could put them in a binder. He took the circle, laid it on top of the number, drew it in pen, a circle. It had to be something that couldn't be done with a typewriter. Solved my problem.
Because probably there weren't dingbats yet.
No.
Exactly.
It was doing the thesis tested even my ability to be stubborn. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, there were so many new things that I was trying to combat.
Absolutely.
And the computer was one of them. Except when I started, once I got the job and got on the tenure track, they put me in the computer lab. Because I was one of the few people who'd used a computer.
Right.
But it was...
Well, at this point in time, let's fast forward. So you've had this very amazing career at the University of Iowa College of Nursing as a faculty member. And then did you retire before your own health issues began?
Yes.
Okay, so you had retired.
My husband took early retirement and wanted to start two businesses. I decided that I would retire from the college. I did request from the dean that I have emeritus status. And we started two businesses. He did the medical. He was the driving force. And I did the legal. Obviously, you never set aside your nursing background. You always see it in myriads of situations. So I liberally applied ethics to law because there were times when I felt like it was appropriate. But we had both businesses, and it was 2013, and I was home alone, and I had the worst headache I'd ever had. Started feeling nauseated, made it to the bathroom, thought I was going to vomit, woke up on the floor. But I was expecting a service person to come, and my husband always called 20 minutes before the service person was due to be there, wanting to know what they'd found out. I had a portable phone in my hand. That's the only reason I survived. I could not get up. I could not. I first of all called my husband, who was at work, and said, he said, "Is it the worst headache you've ever had?" And I said, "Yes." "I'm on my way." "Have you called 911?" "No, I'm hanging up with you. I'm calling 911." And I did. 911 is such an amazing resource that I'd forgotten that time when we didn't have it. The 911 operator was so organized and calm and answered my questions. I answered her questions. I remember my husband getting there. I remember the paramedics getting there. And I remember being in the ambulance and driving down our lane. Our lane is a half a mile long. And I remember saying to the paramedics, tell him not to drive too fast. But they knew John because John had done healthcare for the crowd at Carver-Hawkeye and at Kinnick.
Okay, so he knew the paramedics.
So the paramedics were like, "Dr. Weiler, is this your wife?" "Yes, yes." So it was not expected, and I really, the last memory I had was being on the lane, and the paramedics were talking about not using the siren, and I remember thinking, "Thank God." And then I woke up after the surgery. And remember, my husband was there. He stayed with me. He's the one who said at about a week or 10 days out, he said, "You have to stop taking the pain meds." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because they can be addictive." "Okay, good. I'm glad you're thinking, because I'm not." But it was a real jolt for someone who'd been healthy. Right. And I had high blood pressure and didn't know it. I then had, when they did the MRI, they could see there were other vessels on the other side of my brain that were weakened. So after I recovered from the rupture, I then had a second surgery to go in and put in stents to support the vessels. But it was a real wake-up call for my whole family. All of a sudden, I wasn't the one doing a lot of stuff. And I couldn't do a lot of stuff afterwards. I found that if I lowered my head at all, the headache was just overwhelming. So my husband learned how to empty the dishwasher, fill the dishwasher. Even just leaning to look down was enough to just give me horrendous headaches. But I realized that I was at a premier healthcare facility, and that the reason I was recovering so well is that the neurosurgeon knew exactly what to do, how to do it, and did it quickly. And that's when I thought, I need to give back, because I can't I didn't recover on my own. I had 911, I had paramedics, I had the nursing staff, I had PT, OT, speech. I had this whole group of people who were putting forth effort to get me back on my feet. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew I was going to volunteer.
Okay, well, you've done the segue for me. I was about to say, tell us a little bit about what you're doing today as a volunteer. But then I'd really like to hear what you're doing for nurses, speaking of Carver Hawkeye.
My husband and I were married for 50 years. He had dementia, but before the dementia became really problematic, we were in the epidemic. We had COVID. And we talked about how hard it would be for the staff members to go in and take care of patients in all this personal protective equipment and then go home to families. And, you know, we talked about it, I think, a lot more than a non-healthcare family would. But we talked about how draining it would be, how exhausting it would be, how difficult it would be. And as volunteers, we were not allowed in the hospital for obvious reasons. So when we were allowed back and my friend and I started volunteering again, We talked to the nurses, and you could see exhaustion. It wasn't subtle. I mean, you could see exhaustion. And so Julie Zerwick, Dean of the College of Nursing, had invited me to a game at Carver Hawkeye for the women's basketball team. And she said, "We have a table." Well, I hadn't been in Carver Hawkeye for over 20 years. A table? What is she talking about? So she told me where to meet her, and we had a wonderful time, just a wonderful time. And I just thoroughly enjoyed having a table and being able to eat a meal, have a soft drink, and just chat. And I thought, this would be a great idea for the staff. And so I said to the head nurse and the assistant head nurse, I said, "Here's what I want to do, but I'm really bad with details. So I can set it up, and I can pay for it, but someone's going to need to be the gatekeeper for who gets tickets when." The assistant head nurse said, "I'd be happy to do it," and she's wonderful. So I got a hold of the person who's our contact at the Alumni Center, and I said, "Can I do this? I'll check." "Yes, you can." "Great." So I went to the first, I think, two exhibition games or the first exhibition game, and had the assistant head nurse come with me. I said, "I want you to come so you know what you can describe it." We had a blast. And sat there and just, I said, "What do you think?" And she said, "Oh, they're going to love it." And they do. They absolutely love it. They are so appreciative. Mm-hmm. The people who have gone and Caitlin was amazing.
Caitlin Clark,
everyone who had the chance to go wanted to. And after the season, then I had the option of buying tickets for the NCAA the NCAA. And so I opted for that, and I said to Monica, the assistant head nurse, I said, Monica, I'm going to keep them. I'm going to go to those games because I really enjoyed the exhibition game. Mm-hmm. But I made a commitment, but I'm gonna go to those games. Uh-huh. But that led me to thinking, I'm not going to take it away from the nurses, but I'm going to see if I can get a second table for me. So I've already told them. They know they've got the table. Mm-hmm. And I'll be sitting right in the next table.
Cheering with them.
Cheering with them.
Well, and I think the amazing part about this, Kay, as you know, but maybe some of our listeners don't, is nurses don't traditionally get wined and dined in healthcare. Other professions do, but nurses do not traditionally. So doing something like this, you know, as a former nurse, retired nurse yourself, makes it really doubly meaningful to those nurses that are still in clinical practice.
These are young people, and I'm seeing more and more men. These are young people who work incredibly hard. They are dealing with patients who are very complicated. They're very compromised, most of them. And doing something for entertainment isn't really at the forefront of what they're thinking about.
Right.
Doing something for fun or doing something that everyone else is talking about isn't something that they take for granted. They just have enjoyed it so much. And I have enjoyed their enjoyment. I have enjoyed the feedback. And I get lots of feedback. I reached my 1,000 hours of volunteering during the pandemic and celebrated that a couple of months ago. But one of the nurses, I invited the nurse, the head nurse, assistant head nurse. We've established a stroke survivor group. The staff who keep that rolling. And I invited them, and I said to them, I said, I'm so pleased you were all able to make it. And the assistant head nurse looked at me and said, like we wouldn't. And I thought, I said, I hope someone's taking care of the patients, because we've got, you know, all of you folks here taken care of. But it was, they're so appreciative. They just really and truly want to let me know. And Julie Zerwick is my hero. She not only introduced me to the table, but she also introduced me to student scholarships during mm-hmm. the summer. And I was a little late getting in on last summer, but the funding is still there. So four students who are interested in neuroscience will have scholarships for next summer, which will be funded.
Kay, that is just amazing because you really are living out the concept of generative aging, right? That you are looking across your lifespan, you've identified clearly the things that were important to you, and now you're investing in the future. You know, you're paying it forward. And that is just amazing.
I want my generation to look at where we are, how we got here, and what can we do? Because mm-hmm. there were people who were pivotal in my career. Mm-hmm. If I can be a small piece of that, That's important to me. And the research assistantship is really out of living with my husband, who truly was a scientist, who wrote and wrote and wrote. But also Kathy Schwer, and a woman I haven't mentioned yet, Peggy Gurian, was my research assistant. And I'm an idea person. Details, so Peggy was that detail person. And so when she and her husband moved to Europe because of his position, she came back to Iowa. She said, we really want to come back to Iowa City. And I said, if I got a job for you, we need someone who does QA for our business. We couldn't have picked a better person. Detail-oriented. But it just, the research assistantship was important because sometimes you need another set of hands, you need another set of eyes, you need someone who's that detail person.
And I think what, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking about you mentioning your dad was part of the World War II generation. You know, and probably most of us have seen the TV show called Band of Brothers. But what we don't talk about often is that nursing and being nurses has brought us into a band of sisters.
Yes.
And so whether it's as you're doing now with these student scholarships, whether it's you're, you know, really, you know, honoring these working nurses with an evening out at a basketball game, you know, you really are talking about how close we are knit together as nurses and how that actually improves patient care because we're taking care of each other.
I said to the head nurse and the assistant head nurse, I said, I cannot do what you do. I don't have the physical stamina. I don't have the mental stamina. But I can do this. And so what I wanted was something where the staff could go do something that the rest of the role was talking about. Do something that was fun, not have to worry about a meal, because that's part of the ticket price. They don't have to worry about that. Not have to worry about parking, because that's part of the ticket price. They can get parking that's convenient and just go enjoy.
Yeah.
And that was the goal. And it's exceeded my expectations. They're so happy about it.
That is just amazing. And as we're kind of coming to the end of what I hope will be one of several chats going on, is, you know, as you think of yourself now and where you are, you know, what would be maybe one or two pieces of advice you'd give to a younger adult? And what I'm thinking about is even something as simple as don't fear aging. I think we don't often say that to younger adults, but maybe what is your truth that you would want to share?
I don't fear aging. I would say because nursing has been historically primarily women, I would say know what your financial situation is. Don't assume that because you're taking care of the kids that you're partner or spouse will take care of the finances. Know what they are. I never expected my husband to get dementia. I never expected him to lose that mental acuity that was so much a part of him. But if I had not been doing the family finances for years, I would have been up a creek without a paddle. Mm-hmm. I would have been in so much panic if I hadn't been responsible for paying the property taxes, the insurance, all the other things, which I can't say was easy, but if I didn't know, it would have been such a bigger problem. Mm-hmm. And I can remember early in our marriage when he did all the finances and I took care of the baths and, you know, cooking mm-hmm. the meal and cleaning up the kitchen and all that stuff. But as we got older, I took that over, and I'm so glad that I did. Just knowing what, how is your house, what's the ownership mm-hmm. of your house? Does it mean that if one of you dies, the other one is the survivor? Does it mean, what does it mean about your mortgage? There's mm-hmm. so many things that just are nitty-gritty. They're not unique to aging, but I've seen so many other women, especially living at Oak Knoll East, who are widows, who just had no clue. Mm-hmm. And they talk about how hard it was.
Yeah. What's really interesting about your comments as you're saying that, up to this point in time, I've really heard your nursing voice, but now I hear your legal voice. Just that professional advice that says, as we age, we would all do well to keep our eyes open.
Absolutely.
And don't take things for granted.
No. And for anyone listening, for that spouse that you love, that person that you adore, let them know. Tell them. Mm-hmm. You know, you assume they know.
Right.
But tell them.
Exactly.
Because there may not be tomorrow. And that's hard.
That
is really
very
hard.
And, you know, not to say that we end up on a note like that, but I think what it points to, Kay, and that you yourself are a living example of, is that there is life after the hard.
There is.
That you did lose your husband to dementia, as you have noted, but you are still giving back to the community. You are still engaging. You're one of our favorite people at the SOME Center, which I've just dawned on me that I haven't even talked about yet. I was so captured by your story and wanted to listen because you exemplify everything that we talk about at the Barbara and Richard SOME Center for Gerontological Excellence about this optimal aging. And so you have lived through the hard. I'm sure there are still hard places because that's life, isn't it?
It is. There is no roadmap for grief.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sometimes it just comes up and smacks you in the face.
Absolutely. Well, I think we're at the end of our time today, Kay, and I'd just like to say that, as you know, we're going to be posting this podcast on the website for the SOME Center, and if anyone is interested in hearing more about your story, they can contact us at the SOME Center, and hopefully learn a little bit more about us, because you are such an important part of what we do, and we appreciate this conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Embracing the Journey of Aging. If you liked what you heard, please follow us on our social media pages. You can also find more information on our website. If there is a specific topic you would like us to talk about, or if you have any comments, feel free to email us at some-center@uiowa.edu. Remember, SOMAY is spelled C-S-O-M-A-Y. All other information will be in our show notes. Until next time, we hope you are embracing the journey of aging.